The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Negandhi with you. Plenty of stuff to cover. Bananas weekend, and I feel like this upcoming weekend will be probably the best slate of games we will have before we see the Big Ten and the Pac-12 come in. So we have much to cover. We're going to talk a little bit about the SEC and how it plays out with Alabama, Florida, and Georgia. What do we make of Tennessee and Texas A&M, as well as what's the best team in the Big 12? We'll get Herbie and Pollock's thoughts on that. What do we make of Oklahoma and Texas in desperate situations in the Red River rivalry this coming weekend? Also, we'll get you ready for Clemson, Miami, the showdown in Death Valley, prime time on Saturday night. Enjoy. All right, welcome to the pod. Let's just start out with some positive news. We'll get to breaking down what's going on in the Big 12 and of course, what we're seeing from Texas and Oklahoma and the rest of that conference as they get ready for that big rivalry game. A little bit later on, I want to focus on some teams that really impressed us over the weekend. And let's start with Alabama, Florida, and Georgia. And Herbie, you had a front row seat on watching how Georgia was so dominant against Auburn. Of the three, which team, which program had the best weekend?
Well, Bama continues to kind of be the team that we envisioned when this thing got started. I would have to look at Georgia just because of all, you know, you and I and David and everybody looked at them and kind of scratched our head with the way they started their season against Arkansas. And even David, who's very familiar with the program, talking about Dwan Mathis and, well, this guy's got so much upside. And then, of course, he went out and didn't do well. And this former walk-on, who not a lot of us knew much about on a national level, 13, Stetson Bennett walks in Arkansas and was like, oh, that was kind of cute how he kind of steadied the ship and finished that game out. But, hey, JT Daniels from USC is coming in, and we'll see what happens. And 13 comes tiptoeing out onto the field against a top 10 team in Auburn and that great defense, and looked like he'd been there his entire life. And Georgia at every phase, the defense, the backs ran hard, the offensive line that looked heavy-footed and kind of sloppy in their first game against Arkansas, all of a sudden getting movement and looking good. And, you know, other receivers besides George Pickens. I mean, if you're a Georgia fan, you know, I'm more excited about what I saw from Georgia in that game than anything I saw last year under Jake Fromm, just because of the rhythm that they had offensively. And I don't know, man, Pollock, they just seem like they're playing with a little bit of an edge that we haven't seen from Georgia in a while.
Well, and Bama, yeah, doing Bama things. But I think it's just because we had a reason to question Georgia and we had a reason to question their offense from the week before. But the offensive line, like you said, was the biggest difference from week one to week two. And again, starting lineup shuffled up front with McClendon starting at right tackle, I think makes him a lot better, because I honestly, so far through two games, he's been their best lineman, period. And now you put him in there for what was, I think, your worst lineman. The offensive line got better. But, you know, the interesting thing about Bennett, he's got great mobility. He's a really good athlete. And when you can make play, like the first touchdown drive, unbelievable job. He's got a free rusher coming right at him, spins out of it, hit Kyrus Jackson in the flats, first down, move the sticks. They go down the field. They get seven instead of possibly getting a three. Again, something Jake Fromm couldn't do, because Jake Fromm wasn't a really, really good athlete. Stetson Bennett's going to have to get better if they want to beat Bama, right? I mean, if they're going to go play high-flying Bama. But the two things to me about this team for Georgia that take them from being really good a year ago to being a national championship contender is the quarterback spot has to continue to evolve, continue to get better, continue to be a playmaking spot. But Kirk, last year, the defense was a bunch of guys that we talked about that were no-name guys that, you know, not high caliber talent guys. That's changing. Travion Walker, number 44, coming on. Nolan Smith from a year ago, number 4, coming on. Adam Anderson coming out of nowhere. He's been there for, you know, 3 years, and you highly recruited 5-star kid you hadn't heard much from, rushing the quarterback like a freak. And then I think the last component of that is having a guy like Tyson Campbell, who now is a number one corner. So this defense was really good a year ago. I think it has an opportunity to be great if the offense continues to evolve up front of the line at the quarterback spot and making plays. Georgia's in one of the few teams that we're going to put on the short list to win a national championship.
Up next now for Georgia is Tennessee. What do we make of Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt? I think it's a good measuring stick. You see the talent. You see the difference in the talent in recruiting. He's done a great job. To me, this should be a really interesting matchup because Georgia comes off that emotional win against Auburn, and now a Tennessee team that's not afraid to punch you in the face as well.
I think anytime you got a quarterback that's played in a lot of games, that's been a for them over, I don't know how many years. It's just been erratic.
Long time. Mm-hmm.
Decision-making, the consistency, the belief, and we can say whatever we want, but teams really respond when they believe that their quarterback can make plays and can make good decisions. We're just talking about Georgia, the difference between having, a young guy like Matthews who's trying to find his way versus a guy like Bennett. It made the entire team play better because they believe in what they're doing with that quarterback. And I think with Tennessee, I don't want to sit here and say that Garantano all of a sudden has arrived and he's ready to be this. He was a five-star can't-miss prospect when he came to Jersey. And I think a lot of people wanted to see him be, the kind of all-conference quarterback 3 years ago. And sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And I think he pressed, he struggled, he tried to live up to the hype. He was immature in some ways, and I think he's really been humbled. And I he's a guy I pull for because he didn't quit. He didn't go away. He kind of kept fighting, and at least he's got his team now to where they're 2-0. They're going to have their hands full, obviously, Saturday against this hot Georgia team. But if you're just a Tennessee fan and looking at the way the 19 season ended, where I think they won like 6 in a row and 7 of 8, and look at the way this season has started, where they've won a couple games. You go back from where this program's been,
mm-hmm.
that's huge steps in the right direction. So I don't know if we're going to jump up and down and say they got what it takes to win Saturday, but I like the fact that they're playing with more confidence than they played with, and I think they got better skill, and they got a good offensive line. It's just with that Georgia defense Saturday, David, you wonder if Garantano – if he reverts back to making poor decisions, puts the ball on coverage, because they'll need a balanced attack to have any chance against Georgia.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing that's cool to support what you said. It's the first time I don't think we'd be surprised if Tennessee was banging around with Georgia in the second half. Yeah. Like, we haven't said that in a while. And it's Cade Mays up front now solidifying the right tackle spot, and Trey Smith. The offensive line is physical. Chaney has an identity as a play caller that he knows who he is, what he is. He's got to build this thing with the ground game. By the way, and Kevin, we talked about it. He was one of the dudes of the week last year. Eric Gray's a dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he is going to be really, really good. Number three at the running back spot, second season, you could tell he's got a combination of speed and power and balance and runs really, really hard. So, but if you watch the Missouri game, Garantano making plays down the field, receivers out wide with Palmer and Height catching the ball against man coverage. Can they win outside? Last year, obviously, they lost. They lose their big-time guy. This year, they're trying to find those big-time guys out wide. So I think the playmaking ability, the quarterback spot, do I trust him enough? Can he make enough plays on the road against the Georgia defense? That's, I think, where if Tennessee was better at that spot, I think you could say, hey, this team could compete for the SEC East, could beat Florida, could beat Georgia, maybe be in the mix. But I don't know if they're good enough chemistry-wise yet with QB wide receiver to consistently drop back and pass and beat you. Because Kirk just told you ain't going to line up and pound Georgia. There's too many defensive linemen they can rotate in and out that look the same, for God's sakes. And just, okay, next freak, go ahead. You over there, freak, go in. You freak go in. I mean, they just got so much strength and size and athleticism up front that it'd be hard to wear them down consistently with just the run game. You're going to have balance.
Georgia has the strength there on the defensive side. We would say that in previous years when looking at Florida, but right now you can't argue with what we're seeing from the offense. It's dynamic. They've got some defensive questions. And we will have those answers down the road. They got A&M this coming weekend. But when you look at Kyle Trask in this offense and the weapons, of course, Kyle Pitts if you try to shut him down, you put two or three guys on him, Kadarius Toney's speed's going to just blow you away. As we saw in that 57-yard touchdown against South Carolina, we're surrounded by five guys. They've got Grimes as well. They don't have a consistent running game, but right now they don't need it when you have Tress doing what he's doing, where he's completing nearly 72% of his passes. When you see this offense, Herbie, what do you think of? We briefly brought it up at halftime on ABC that if this could be one of those LSU, again, LSU last year, lightning in the bottle, but this feels like everything's clicking on all cylinders and they could be one of those offensive juggernauts the rest of the way.
Well, it's just in college football, when you have a quarterback that is able to process coverage quickly and then has weapons. I mean, you know, a lot of people are trying to say that this could be Dan Mullen and what he's doing with Kyle Trask could, like you said, be like what Joe Brady did with Joe Burrow. And I think we're all going to kind of like say, well, let's kind of slow down there, just because that was a once in a lifetime. That was a perfect storm, you know, not with just with Burrow, but all the playmakers around him. But with that being said, for 2020, offensively, Trask is able to process. He looks like a scientist back there with his ability to recognize weaknesses and where to go with the ball. They, you know, they don't have to run the ball, but the two backs are averaging over 5 yards a carry. Pierce and Davis are nice back there. They're not game breakers, but they're nice. Pitts gets a lot of the attention, but for a group of receivers, you know, they lost a few to the NFL last year. Toney's finally healthy, and he's that guy, that dynamic guy in space. Grimes is a beast. Copeland can do damage. They've got weapons. They can beat you. You combine Dan Mullen, who's does a great job of attacking defenses. He knows all week. He tells Trask these are the matchups we're looking for. Then you have a quarterback that is able to recognize and see what he prepped for all week. And then you throw in the fact that they've got guys that can win one-on-one. Man, it makes it hard on a defensive coordinator. You can't just double the big fella, Pitts, and say, okay, prove it to us. Try to beat us. They'll be like, no problem. Here comes Toney. Here comes Grimes. Here comes Copeland. Plenty of guys. So I think this offense, it's fun to watch. And this quarterback, man, I just remember last year, Felipe Franks was so, like, volatile when we did the Miami-Florida game. He's talking trash. Then he ends up getting hurt a week or two later. And here comes this guy, Trask, just stumbling in. No one really knew anything about him. And he just kind of limited a little bit athletically. And he's just dink, 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 just throwing it. Simple reads, simple passes, accurate. And athletes make plays. And he continues to do that at a higher level. So it's going to be hard for anybody to slow Florida's offense down, David.
Yeah, and they got the trump card with Kyle Pitts. I mean, he's just, you know, defensively, when you have to stop people like him and you have to allocate resources to him, it makes life really hard. Now, listen, here's what I'll say. I would love to see this off. I want to see this offense against a good defense and a defense that will play man-to-man on everybody and maybe double Kyle Pitts, a defense that can keep up speed-wise because – you know, as much as we love Toney, Toney's always been kind of a gadget guy. He's not really a receiver. You know, he's not a guy that puts the, you know, runs all the routes, you know, perfectly. Or, you know, when you looked at last year, when you looked at LSU, you had so many guys that fit so well with Chase that could win everything, Jefferson that could win over the middle and really run ridiculous routes, Moss who could make contested catches was big tight end, a matchup problem, Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of the backfield. So, I think it's going to be interesting to watch these weapons develop, the ground game develop. But Trask is just his to me, Kirk, it's mostly about his poise. It's mostly about his patience and pocket ability to move. Like, it's just different, man. You watch all these guys, and you watch them in the NFL. You watch them in college. That's all I did Saturday and Sunday was watch football all day long. And there's so many quarterbacks, Bo Nix being one, that runs out of the pocket as fast as he can when he gets people on him. Trask is just like, hey, bro, it's cool. You know, you can fall at my legs. You can fall over here. I'm gonna dip to my right. I'm gonna dip to my left. I'm gonna set my feet and I'm gonna throw the football. And, you know, when he gets pressured and when they get a little better defense, it's gonna be more fun to watch and see if this offense is on that level. But I tell you what, first time in a long time that I have question marks about Florida's defense more so than their offense. Their defense they're going to have to find guys that are playmakers. And Brenton Cox, number one, is going to have to be a guy. And young Dexter, big boy in the middle, number nine, who's like 6'6", 300 pounds. He's going to have to be, you know, that guy up front. Both those guys in the trenches are going to have to come on and play really, really well and continue to improve throughout the season, because they're not the defense that they've had in the past. So the offense is going to have to be even better this year.
Pollock, you mentioned defense. That will transition to a tweet from Herb Street recently, where it just said three words: Barry Odom salute. What did we see from Arkansas? Congrats to Sam Pittman versus the air raid in KJ Costello that was different from LSU.
It was awesome because here's the thing. First of all, this is funny because we build all of our assumptions in college football and what we see. Well, we saw Georgia struggle with Arkansas. We're like, oh God, they suck. Like, Georgia's terrible. And then you see Arkansas win the next week. You're like, hey, maybe Arkansas is not as bad as we thought. And then you see, obviously, you see Kentucky last week against Auburn, and like, Auburn played a much better team than Kentucky. Kentucky loses to Ole Miss. You know, Florida just beat up Ole Miss. Like, we're going to still continue to get so much more information, but Barry Odom's always been a stud. And by the way, at Missouri, his defense has always played great without all of the five-star guys like everybody else had in the conference. But they play with outstanding effort. They make you earn everything. And what do? They made – listen, Costello threw the ball as much as he did a week ago. He threw the ball 60 times, for God's sakes. I mean, he threw the ball all over the yard. What did Barry Odom say? You want to dink and dunk? You want to make small plays? That's fine. We're going to come up and we're going to tackle you. We're going to play zone coverage. We're not going to allow you to have – explosive plays down the field. We're gonna make this really, really hard on you. We're gonna make you read coverage, Kirk. We're not gonna let you drop back and throw it to freak over here, drop back, check it down to my running back. That we're gonna make you earn everything. We're gonna give you different looks. And how about Sam Pittman, Arkansas? They got him going, they got him rolling. And Sam Pittman talked about it. He's talked about it all preseason. He talked about it week one. He talked about it after the game. The first thing he said after the game, we got to teach these kids that they can win. They hadn't won in a long time. We got to make them believe. And through 2 weeks, there's a lot to believe in about Arkansas and the way they daggum swarm to the football, playing hard, believing in each other, and fighting harder than we've seen them fight in years.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think guys like David and I mean, I don't think we're necessarily shocked that Arkansas's defense played much, much better than LSU. I think that Arkansas ended up winning the game. I thought that Barry Odom, just because of the respect that we all have for him, I thought he would look at that LSU film and think, okay, mental note, stay out of man-to-man coverage.
Yeah.
Duly noted. I got it. You know, I mean, it didn't take a football genius to realize that Odom was going to mix maybe a little bit man-to-man here and there, maybe a little bracket here and there. But for the most part, he's going to mix in rushing three and dropping eight, make them run the ball, keep the ball in front of them, tackle, very little yards after the catch. Think about yards after the catch in the Mississippi State LSU game because of all that man coverage. Costello was throwing a lot of mesh routes underneath crossers. Guys would catch it. Guy would miss a tackle. Then he'd run for 30 or 40 yards, right? You didn't see that against Arkansas because you had eight or nine guys with their eyes up looking for the football. And you know, he threw three interceptions. And so it's very, very different for fans to understand. Like, for a quarterback in a new system to play man-to-man, that offense, the air raid, is made for man-to-man. That's like backyard football. If you ever played a turkey bowl game and you're the quarterback and you got your cousins and your uncles and nieces and everyone's in the yard and everyone's playing, you're the quarterback and there's like seven or eight guys on your team and seven or eight on the other side. And everyone's running around, I'm open, and they got their arms wet. That's air raid, and you just eventually find a guy and you throw it, right? So that's what they want to see. Now, all of a sudden, you play zone, and you got eight defenders, and you're sitting there holding the ball, well, check it down, four-yard game. I mean, his yards per completion against LSU, I think it was around 10 yards an attempt, and against Arkansas, 5 yards an attempt. And he completed way higher percentage. He completed 73% of his passes against Arkansas and only 60 against LSU. It's because he was taking bigger shots downfield against man-to-man. So get ready for Mike Leach. This is Mike Leach. This is Mississippi State. Beat LSU.
Yep.
You know, don't be surprised if they rally and scare, you know, somebody else. And then they'll lose to Vandy. I mean, this is kind of what they've done over the years. And so – not shocked.
And it's what Mike Leach always does, by the way. Yeah. We'll see Mike Leach have those big upsets all the time, like you said. But and then we were like, what? Just wait, what happened? You go from beating the best team in the country, and then and I don't know what it is, because he's got such a cool personality and he's got great sayings, and but it always seems to be so hodgepodge up. And by the way, it wasn't their defense this past week; they gave up 21 points. And by the way, their offense gave up points again. Their offense turned the football over too much to help. I mean, their defense has played really, really well through two games. I mean, as well as anybody. And he's going to have to find, obviously, more consistency. And by the way, Kirk, you got to run the football sometimes. And that's always the knock on him is, we threw it 60 times. Kirk, when you play zone coverage, usually that means what? There's less people in the box. When you're going to drop people to cover my pass, there's less people in the box. I have to be able to run the football successfully and commit to running the football. And that's what they don't – he can't ever have that balance, which never leads to backing it up. Because guess what? There's going to be windy days, and there's going to be days where your quarterback's a little bit off and you play great secondaries and coverages that fool you, and you got to be able to have something to beat it, and that's where they'll have to evolve.
Yeah, they couldn't run the ball in that limited box. And, again, it is what it is. This is going to be a very unpredictable season, not just in the SEC, but all over the country. I mean, we're seeing in the NFL, you know, the Titans had to cancel their game against the Steelers, Cam Newton. You know, just when you think you start to know a team, all of a sudden there's contact tracing or there's this or there's that. So it's going to be a very, very much of a roller coaster ride, as we've known all along. But I think on top of that, it's just college football. It's emotion. It's inconsistency. It's one week looking great. The next week you read your press clippings and everyone pat you on the back on Twitter and Instagram, and you lose that. You lose your kind of your edge, and all of a sudden you get beat. I mean, it's that happens every year in college football, and this year obviously won't be any different.
Herbie, you just summed up the Big 12. Just that last two sentences right there, because anything can happen. As we are seeing, a salute to Oklahoma State as the last undefeated in this conference. And who would have thought, considering how they looked against Tulsa an opening weekend for them. It's now time for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection's going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. Irby, what do you think so far?
Well, every week we're going to be taking a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor. And don't forget, the All-State Playoff Predictor breaks down the top team's chances of making the college football playoff. I'll be pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with Allstate. You've never been in better hands. And for me, I told you last week, Kevin, that it's going to be incredibly fluid just because of the what we're facing in 2020. The Big Ten, I'm not even looking at this point. I'm only looking at teams that are actually playing. And my top four personally will be very volatile. I mean, it'll be fluid. It'll be moving back and forth. I'm not one of these guys like the AP vote. Well, they've been holding one, and they won 2-0, and the team behind them won 85-0, but they're number one and they won, so I'm going to keep them there. I don't do that. So Alabama right now for me moved to one. I moved Clemson back down to two. Gators just holding on barely ahead of Georgia because of the consistency over a few weeks. So I've got them at three. I got Georgia moving into my top four. With Georgia looking that good, Miami, who didn't play, had to slide out just because Georgia looked so good. And I got BYU. My next two coming on out of the top four, my next two, Miami and then BYU sitting there at six. And I think they're real. I know they don't get a chance to play a lot of great competition, but their average victory at this point, I think they've beaten teams 49-8 by an average. So I don't care if you're playing a high school team. If you're blowing people out, you're blowing people out looking good. So I got BYU ahead of Notre Dame and other teams sitting there at number six.
Herbie, I love that you're going with the eye test here. As of right now, the All-State Playoff Predictor has Ohio State, of course, yet to play. We talked about that at 69% to make the playoff. Alabama in second at 68%. Clemson at 62%. Georgia at 45%. Wisconsin at 37%. Then Oregon at 31%. The most fascinating thing is if you look at this and you go down, Notre Dame at 15%. Just above Florida, which is at 14%, USC at 13%. You mentioned BYU at 9%. One team or one conference we're not mentioning, the Big 12. The best shot right now is Oklahoma State at 3-0 at 5%. So we will see how this plays out. TCU, Kansas State, Iowa State, props this weekend for surviving. As for the teams that didn't survive, like Oklahoma and Texas, guys, Tom Herman, year four, makes those changes that Pollock's talked about to the coaching staff. Eventually, you got to point to yourself, right? Recruiting's been great, but I asked one simple question. Where's the toughness in Austin? Sam Ellinger says the university deserves better after a loss like that. I feel terrible for him because Keontae Ingram played really well, and the young man's trying to do everything he can and then sticks out that ball on the fumble. Where's the toughness at Oklahoma? We keep on saying that with the defense. First losing streak in the regular season since 1999. By the way, Spencer Rattler was born in 2000. Who's the best team in the Big 12 right now? Is this now an Iowa State, Oklahoma State conversation? Or Herbie, are you leaning that we'll get something turning around Texas and Oklahoma in this upcoming game? Because if Oklahoma loses, that's a three-game losing streak. And if Texas loses, they'll be 1-2, and they could have been 0-3 if they didn't have that miraculous comeback against Texas Tech. Something's going on with these two powers right now that we are not seeing that jump to the next level.
Yeah, Oklahoma, that's the one that's a bigger mystery to me, only because we even said leading into at least I said going into the Oklahoma-Iowa State game, it's easy to look at Iowa State and think on paper, this team has what it takes to be able to win this game and has what it takes to be able to be competitive. They have been in the past. And then on the other hand, you think, okay, history tells us Oklahoma typically loses a game they shouldn't lose. But to their credit, they come out swinging the next game. And we did not see that this time. And we saw the quarterback position still be, you know, I know they scored points, but it just doesn't feel as solid and consistent as they had in the past. So I think that's going to be something we're going to have to keep a close eye on. But the personality of the team, it's Lincoln, you could see his frustration. Andy wanted the pass interference call, but I don't know, man. I typically err on the side of trusting Lincoln, David. And this time, this team, the defense is what it is. And usually the offense bails them out, but this time they couldn't quite get it done.
I don't have anything positive to say. I mean, I don't think if you're a realistic Oklahoma fan, you do either, but Iowa State, I mean, outgains you. Iowa State out first downs you. Iowa State ran the football better. You know, it's just it's frustrating to watch when you watch Oklahoma. I tell you what, probably the most disappointing thing if you're thinking about being an Oklahoma fan and all these great offenses you've had, Kirk, is you've been able to run the football consistently, and that's different now. The offensive line, I think, has a lot of talented guys. I think they're going to be really, really good at some point, but a lot of youth, a lot of young, and they look like it. So they're not pushing people around, you know, like we've seen in the past. And by the way, that's not going to fix itself. But Iowa State on the other side, Iowa State had the better running game. They had the better playmaker at running back. Breece Hall's a stud, man. I mean, when that kid's going to start getting some love here soon, because he looked really good a year ago as a freshman. Now you're starting to see he can make and miss, and he can make those electric, dynamic, big-time plays. You know, Brock Purdy is, again, it's going to be up and down and inconsistent, but they made enough plays late in the game to win, especially considering the way they started. They started so sloppy with penalties and, you know, not playing great. But to Texas, Kirk, let me ask you a question. When you watch that Texas game, if you switched uniforms, I would think that TCU had the better talent. Like, mm-hmm. TCU looks like what Texas used to look like. And I say that, TCU finds playmakers all the time, every year. You look in the NFL draft, like receivers that can scoot, receivers making plays all over the field. You can tell Evans is going to be that next guy at running back. I mean, my God, he doesn't play much, but when he does, you can tell he's going to be a freak, who's the most highly recruited kid in TCU history at the running back spot. Gary Patterson and TCU do a better job finding skill, finding playmakers. The offense for Texas continues to me looks the same. Listen, Mike Yurich comes over and maybe they're adjusting to their system, but I'll tell you this, it doesn't matter who's there. You know good and well Tom Herman's going to have a big input on offense. That's what he does. That's who he is, and that's what he should be. But I was blown away that when I watched that game that I thought TCU had more playmakers. TCU was better coached, and we're saying that about Texas consistently year after year now.
My take on Texas is this. I feel like the culture in Austin and the amount of pressure that's on that, I feel like it's impacting and affecting the team. And not just this year, over the last couple of years. I feel like they hear things on Twitter. They hear what people about their program. And I just feel like, I wonder how fragile the team psyche is, because when things get tough or they get challenging, it just seems like, and I know they're close to winning this game. They ended up fumbling late, you know, and would have given them the lead. But it just seems like great teams, or teams that believe, they find ways to make a play or two late and they find a way to win the game. Texas just seems like when they get into those kind of games and it's back and forth, I don't know if it's the pressure or the potential consequences. If we lose, oh no, everyone's going to say we suck. Oh man, I don't know. I don't want to have to deal with that. I don't know what it is, but it just, something seems to just off just a bit. It's not like they're losing 31-8 and they don't have talent and they're awful. I mean, they, even against LSU last year, they had a chance to compete into the fourth, late into the fourth quarter. Yep. They have players. They have a team. They have ability. I just think it's a mindset that is missing right now. And I just think it maybe has something to do with the fact that as soon as they lose, guys like the three of us are talking on shows saying, what the hell's wrong with Texas? And I just wonder if that is ultimately impacting them in some negative way collectively.
Yeah, the one thing that stands out, too, with TCU and the recruiting is they develop their talent. We're not seeing Texas bringing in the four stars and the five stars, developing talent where the young man gets better over time and the mental toughness. And that's not just in the Herman window. That's been going on for a decade here. You start to wonder here with Gary Patterson separating himself in that state, in that conference. TCU is now 7-2 against Texas since joining the Big 12.
7-2.
Yes. And like, he's not getting better recruits. He's just developing players who are mentally tougher.
That's mind blowing. I mean, and every year we're picking the pick on game day, and you're like, ah, you know, surely 4-year starting quarterback for Texas, Sam Ellinger, he's a stud. Yep. Like Max Duggan, like, yeah, I mean, struggled as a freshman, but actually beat the mess out of Texas as a freshman. But he's not there yet. You know, like, it's going to take some time. You know, Johnson and Barber, they're developing receivers on the outside from who they lost. Nope. By the way, Duggan balled. That dude running the football, he's a really good athlete. I mean, you watch him. He's a big cat, too. Now, he's not no small fry. But running the football when he needed to make plays, running, taking big shots. He was okay with it, but then, you know, throwing the football, he's obviously got a big arm. And last year he struggled big time. And this year you can tell. What did you just talk about, Kevin? Development. He's developed. The offensive side of the football has developed. Sam Ellinger, listen, he's a really good player. I love the kid to death. And Kirk, we love everything inside of his chest. But you still consistently look at his numbers week to week, and they're okay. I mean, they're not great. He's going to run the football really well. He's going to score a ton of touchdowns, but he's going to complete 50 to 60% of his passes, and they're going to drop balls and miss plays like they did in the game that they need to make.
I just think Texas, the final thing for me on Texas in the Tom Herman era is when they're an underdog and people don't believe in them, they're a dangerous team. And when they're expected to win, they are vulnerable. And to me, that has nothing to do with ability. That has to do with a mindset. That has to do with your approach and how you feel about being chased. You know, it's easier to be an underdog. It's easier to play. You can stand in front of your team and look at them and say, they don't believe in you. No, nobody except this locker room believes in you. It's easy to get them mad. But when they're not mad, and TCU's the underdog, or Baylor's the underdog, or Iowa State's the underdog, or Kansas State's the underdog, vulnerable. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, a great point. I think there's a stat that was running around on Saturday after the loss where Herman has six losses since he's joined Texas as the ranked team, losing to unranked teams. And that's the most in the FBS since he joined in Austin. So that doubles down exactly what you're talking about. Our final thought here, we get it on ABC, man, and circling this date after watching Miami play in primetime, we get them again, Clemson, Miami, Death Valley. Herbie, measuring stick here for you on how far Miami has come or is this really the first real test we'll understand where Clemson is this year?
Well, you know, we've kind of on ABC, we've kind of been the voice of the Canes, you know, through watching them just kind of navigate through these first few weeks of the season. And Chris and I even have said during some of the broadcasts, you know, they took her at Louisville and, you know, it's like, okay, that was a good win. That was a good win. And
cute.
You know,
that's cute.
Blew Florida State out, who Florida State's, you know, struggling obviously right now. And I think in the second half of the game, as we're searching for things to talk about, a big thing was Clemson. You have a bye week next week, which was last weekend for them. And we're kind of saying, okay, now we're about to find out. Now we're going to see how much this De'Eric King and Rhett Lashley and this offense, now we see where they really are. And they know that. Manny Diaz would probably will have to answer questions all week talking about this is where Clemson's they're the bar, right? I mean, not only in the ACC, maybe in the country. And now you get a chance to go on the road and take on Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne and Brent Venables. And you've been watching these guys play in big games for a long time. And guess what? You're going to get thrown into the ring with them and you're going to find out how good you are. So Miami, we'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing their front line guys, I think, are pretty capable athletically. I don't think they have the depth. You know, they're still trying to build that. But I'm fired up. I know game day is going there. It'll be the Saturday night game on ABC. And we'll find out where, like we said, where Miami is.
And we're used to Clemson destroying everybody and looking really great. And last week, I tell you what, watching that Virginia game, it wasn't great. It wasn't vintage Clemson. Here's what I see across college football, and I wonder if y'all see the same thing. I see a lot of average. You agree? Y'all agree? I think y'all, do y'all agree with that? I see a lot of meh. Like I don't see as much in the past. I've seen a lot better execution, and I've seen a lot more. I think this team is really good, or this team is really good. Now I think everything's kind of just meh right now, and I think everybody's more finding themselves than ever when we started a season, as opposed to people that have had so much time to prep in the past and then those cupcakes to come out the gate and you've really defined who you are. I see a lot of teams still struggling to find identities of who they are and what they're going to be this season. And, you know, I mean, like Clemson, they don't struggle with Virginia. Usually they beat the doors off of Virginia, and Virginia made plays. And even with a new quarterback, you know, I think the biggest thing was their defense for me with Clemson giving up over 400 yards, and Virginia looking at times like they could really do what they wanted to do. And it's Virginia, you know, and I'm just surprised by that. So just college football throughout the season so far has just been very mixed bag, very, I don't know what the heck to expect.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it has a lot to do with, you know, when you don't have a spring practice and you're limited with are we playing this year? I don't know. I hear we're playing. Well, we're allowed to go back to June, and some guys are lifting like logs to try to lift to stay in shape, and you know, just doing whatever they can to try to maintain their ability to be in game shape, right? And you know, it's one thing to look at Clemson and just see their uniforms, Trevor Lawrence, throw them out there, they're automatically going to win 50-6. And I think it's just if they're struggling. I think it tells you that pretty much everybody is still trying to find the continuity, still trying to kind of get into that rhythm, into that cycle where they kind of get hardened into, like you go through spring and you go through a camp. By the time you show up for week one, you may not be executing the level where you'll be week three, but your body's just kind of in season mode. You're ready to be hit. You're ready to play football. And I think these teams are still working towards that. And I'd expect beginning this weekend and weekends to come to start to see the cream start to rise and start to see the teams that are elite get a few games under their belt, start playing to the capability that you expect them to play. Because you're right. I mean, I think anybody who watched Clemson play, I mean, they ended up winning convincingly. But if you really watch the game, it didn't look like the score. I mean, Brent Venables, I don't know if he probably went to bed Saturday night. You know, he's probably with the way his defense played, and you won 41-23. So it'll be good. I can't wait to watch. And those receivers and the skill that they have in the backfield, go up against that defense that's not coming off their best effort. Brent will definitely have their attention in meetings and on the field this week after the way they played in last week.
And to piggyback to the conversation that Pollock brought up about consistency and finding a team that knows its identity, the only, and it's early, like we've talked about, the only team I feel like that we know their identity on offense and defense so far is Alabama. Like, that's the one team I know, like, okay, they're ready to go this season. There's no trying to figure things out. They've got Lane Kiffin this coming weekend, which will be really interesting as Nick Saban's 20-0 against former assistants at Alabama. And then next weekend, Georgia, Alabama in Tuscaloosa. I can't wait to see how this kind of sorts out. Fellas, it's been great. Good stuff on a Monday. And, of course, Pollock will be back later in the week with to make his picks. So we'll go back and forth on that. And, Herbie, have a good week. Looking forward to Saturday.
Yeah, you guys have a great week.
See you, dude.
And big thanks to Herbie and Pollock for joining us here in the College Football Podcast this Monday as we set the tone for the rest of the week, a very big week in college football. Also, Taylor Schwenk on the other side, always getting it done for us and coordinating our schedules and making sure we can make it happen on Skype. Once again, later in the week, Pollock will be back with us to make his picks and also get you ready for a huge weekend. If you want more football, please, social distance, wear a mask, stay safe.